Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 48 degrees and overcast. Today's Wednesday, June 20th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The field of candidates hoping to replace Terry Blake on the Sitka Assembly is now at five people. Ryan Haig declared his interest in the appointment yesterday. The 34-year-old Haig moved to Sitka in 1996. He served 3 years on the Police and Fire Commission, spending two of those years as chairman. He's also volunteered for search and rescue and at the Alaska Raptor Center. Haig's announcement follows Matt Hunter's declaration of candidacy on Monday. Haig and Hunter joined former Assembly members Jack Osment and Bill Payden and former Assembly candidate Michelle Putz and seeking the seat being vacated by Terry Blake. Blake will step down at the conclusion of old business during the Assembly's next regular meeting on Tuesday, June 26th. Blake's replacement will be appointed by the Assembly and serve only through October's municipal election. Voters would then select a candidate to serve the 1 year remaining in Blake's term. The deadline to apply for the Assembly appointment is noon today in the municipal clerk's office. A two-year project is underway in Sitka Sound this summer to study the rhinoceros auklet. Unlike much of the biological research in the state, the work on this particular seabird is not about unraveling the mystery of its decline. The rhino, as scientists call it for short, is actually thriving. And a graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks is going to spend most of her waking hours over the next two summers trying to learn why. For Alexis Will, it's pretty much about seabirds and little else. Since graduating from Sitka High School 10 years ago, she's been in the field from Antarctica to the Bering Sea, assisting in bird research for a variety of different projects. Now, in pursuit of her own graduate degree, she's got her own project to understand the foraging strategies of the rhinoceros auklet. The study was suggested by mentors in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service who, over the course of decades of work in the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, had noticed a gap in their knowledge of seabird ecology. Why, when changes in the environment were putting so many species under pressure, were rhinos thriving? Will says this is an atypical wildlife study.
So instead of going at climate change or changes driven by human activity in a negative way to see, you know, oh, why is this animal declining? We can look at a successful species and say, well, why is it doing well? And then look around to see what other species might be doing well, too, if they experience similar changes.
Rhinoceros auklets range from Southern California to Japan and eat fish, from tiny anchovies to larger rockfish that inhabit the top 10 meters of the ocean's surface. There are about 2,000 nesting pairs on St. Lazaria Island in the mouth of Sitka Sound. They're ungainly birds. They struggle to become and to remain airborne. Their landings are barely controlled disasters. They don't seem like very fierce predators. In fact, Will admits that they're adorable, but they clearly have some advantage, and Will would like to find it.
Rhinoceros auklets are really neat. They have a really long nestling period, so when the chick is in the nest growing. And so this covers about 54 days. And a lot can happen in the ocean in 54 days. You know, new fish move into an area, fish move out of the area. So they kind of cover, in a season, a lot of different ocean conditions. And so by looking at how they adjust their foraging behavior over that time and the adult diet themselves, I can get kind of a handle on how hard they're having to work, potentially, to find food for themselves and their chick.
This may not seem like such an interesting problem at first, but there's something else about the rhino that makes its success unusual. Other seabirds bring food back to their young throughout the long summer day. Rhinos only return to their chick once in every 24 hours, and always at night.
So they kind of have this a different set of factors to sort of balance when they're out there, because they still need a feed for themselves, but they have, I mean, they have all day. You know how long the sun's up now. And so they have all day to go out there and find food for themselves, but then they really need to maximize that single trip they make for their chicks' food.
Will plans to capture and tag adult rhinos. She'll attach a GPS tag about half the size of a pencil eraser to their tails. This device records the bird's location and place another tag on its leg that records water depth. She'll replace the tags every 3 to 5 days. Rhinos nest in burrows they've dug in the shallow soils of St. Lazaria, and you'll remember, they only return once a night. that's when Will finds them.
I love to pretend that I'm some sort of ninja of the night. Really, that just involves sitting still in salmonberry bushes on a wet, muddy ground. I'm catching them as they come into their burrows. So I go out there and I set my traps and I lay in wait. And I pretty much wait to hear them come in, and they're not stealthy. They, even though they're using the cover of darkness, it sounds like attack helicopters. They're crashing into tree trunks and falling through the branches, and it's kind of like being in a little bit of a war zone out there.
Other data Will plans to collect include sample feathers from the rhino chicks. They'll be tested for stress hormones that Will can correlate to the food supply. The rhinoceros auklet study is funded by the North Pacific Research Board and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's actually part of an overarching research effort on groundfish. But the ocean ecosystem is a puzzle made up of pieces, and Will's research will contribute to the picture.
We're part of the ecosystem, too, and so understanding what's going on out there is definitely a piece of what I'll be doing and what they're doing as well.
Will plans to spend the next two summers on St. Lazaria and the next two autumns crunching numbers on campus in Fairbanks. She hopes to complete her thesis and graduate with a master's degree in 2014. The city-owned rescue boat in Tenneke Springs is getting a boathouse. Maggie's Wake is a 26-foot landing craft used by the city as an emergency response vessel. Tenneke Assistant Fire Chief Gordon Chu says it's an incredibly powerful tool for rescues and for firefighting.
500 gallons per minute. We can pump right out of the bay, drafting through the bottom of the boat, so we're always hooked up to water. And that's more water than our fire truck.
Chu says the boat performs admirably most of the year. It's fought brush fires, helped respond to stranded marine mammals, and more. But it stays in the water all the time, and that makes things tricky in the winter. For example, Chu remembers some problems Tenneke firefighters encountered during a recent training exercise.
The bow door was frozen shut. We needed to anchor the boat as we came into the beach, and the anchor was frozen in its locker. And on and on and on. The rear door in the main cabin is a sliding door. It was frozen shut.
The city obtained $125,000 from the state in 2010 to build a boat shelter, and the floating foundation was put in place last week. Ju says having a boathouse will keep snow off the vessel and shield it from extreme temperatures. It also will offer some storage space for the equipment the boat needs. Ju says they will model their approach on the Coast Guard, which configures its vessels for particular missions.
So we've taken that to heart here, since our boat can be dangerously overloaded with fire hoses and a 500-gallon per minute pump and oxygen, EMS jump kits, all our spares and supplies. And now we'll be able to get those off the boat and have them staged for quick deployment, so we just bring what we need.
Chu says Tenneke officials hope to have the boathouse in place before the first snowfall in the autumn. You can see pictures of the foundation arriving in Tenneke on our website, kcaw.org. The state agency charged with protecting children fails to fairly and adequately respond to citizen complaints. That's the finding of an 8-month investigation by the state ombudsman's office, which resulted in a 94-page report released on Monday. The report recommends a complete overhaul of the regulations governing grievances in the Alaska Office of Children's Services. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Alaska Ombudsman Linda Lord Jenkins says her office rarely initiates an investigation. Instead, it usually responds to specific complaints lodged against state agencies or employees. But Lord Jenkins says the number of complaints filed against the Office of Children's Services in recent years led the Ombudsman's office to take a closer look at the agency's grievance process.
In this case, we believed that there was a fatally flawed complaint system at Children's Services.
Lord Jenkins says her investigators spent 8 months talking to OCS employees and citizens who'd complained about the agency. They found inconsistent and erratic responses to grievances.
People would file grievances. They could prove to us that they had filed grievances, and they just never got responses, or the grievance was lost.
In her report, Lord Jenkins places blame on OCS regulations, which she says are just as confusing to department caseworkers as they are to citizens. A grievance filed with OCS can end up in one of two venues. In some instances, an administrative law judge will hear the case and present a decision to the Department of Health and Social Services Commissioner for action. In other cases, the facts are heard by a regional review panel, which can only issue non-binding recommendations. In either case, the OCS director isn't required to be notified.
So there were a lot of structural problems that just create other problems for individuals who are seeking to enforce their legal rights.
OCS Director Christy Lawton says agency employees were aware of the problems before the ombudsman's investigation. She hopes to have new grievance regulations in place by early next year and says the report provides a good starting point.
It's been an area that we have struggled with and have known we needed to work on, but frankly just didn't have the staff time or resources. And so the depth to which they really went through it and mapped out all the regulations and even give us potentially, you know, language that we can use to draft new regulations, it was very helpful, and I anticipate that we will be using a lot of that.
The regulations in question are administrative and do not have to be approved by the legislature. However, they will be reviewed by the Department of Law and available for public comment before taking effect. OCS is the state's child protection agency, which can take custody of children if staff finds the parents are neglectful or abusive. The Ombudsman's Office is an independent state agency, though for funding purposes, it's considered part of the Alaska Legislature. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
So in weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander, calls for cloudy skies, scattered showers, highs around 57, south winds 10 miles per hour, shifting to the northeast late in the afternoon. Tonight, cloudy, scattered showers, lows around 49, northeast winds at 10, and tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, highs around 61. This is KCAW in Sitka.